Thank you very much. I hope that this microphone works. If it doesn't, will someone let me know? And thank you very much for that nice introduction, most of which I could not hear, by the way, since I'm deaf and the acoustics here are not perfect. However, let me begin. A year ago, I spoke here at the LA Times book fair about an impending transformation made possible by new technologies that would radically alter the way books are published, distributed, and perhaps written. I said then that though the transformation was inevitable, in my opinion, and that in many of my colleagues as well, our publishing industry, the industry in which I spent my working life, would resist it, for to do otherwise would render much of what publishers now do unnecessary, and thus render themselves unnecessary too. Publishers would no longer have to print editions, store them in warehouses, ship them physically to wholesalers and retailers, as they've been doing for the past 400 years. Instead, books will be stored and delivered electronically at practically no unit cost, and reproduced in book form, one at a time, on demand, indistinguishable from factory-made paperbacks at innumerable worldwide locations accessible to readers practically everywhere. In a moment, I'll discuss this future in some detail, but first I want to emphasize that what we are facing is no small thing, but a paradigm shift comparable to the transformation of European and eventually world civilization made possible 500 years ago when movable type and the printing press introduced widespread literacy to Europe, displacing the long theological monopoly over learning with a broad secular literature which led, for better and worse, to our modern world. A transformation vigorously opposed by Rome and later by Mecca. That the church failed in its counter-reformation while the mosque succeeded is, of course, the substance of today's headlines. But what the so-called terrorist threat challenges is precisely the humanistic, secular, inquisitive civilization of personal freedom constrained only by consensual law, made possible by the avalanche of printed books that flowed from Gutenberg's invention. Without those books, you and I, to say nothing of the University of California, or even California itself, would not be here this morning. I do not mean to dwell on such large matters so early on a Saturday morning in spring, but I want to emphasize that book publishing is no trivial matter. It is not a minor branch of the entertainment industry, for it is from books and only from books that we may begin to understand for ourselves who and what we are, how we got here, and where we may be going. Without the vast and diverse secular literature made possible by the printing press, the personal freedom, civil society, free inquiry, and scientific understanding, which we all take for granted, are inconceivable. Without books, we would be lost, as uncomprehending as the absolutist forces that are now determined to replace our secular, tolerant, fragile culture with a despotism that has constrained every other culture except ours that human beings have ever known. The paradigm shift that we face today will be even more consequential than that of the 15th century, for the radically new technology from which it will evolve will function from the start on a worldwide scale and at the speed of light, creating the possibility of literacy everywhere, as Gutenberg's technology created that possibility within the narrow confines of Europe. This new technology consists of three elements, none of which existed as recently as 15 years ago. First of these, of course, is the internet, which permits instantaneous, unmediated transactions at any distance between seller and buyer at practically no transmission cost. The second is the ability to reduce any text to a digital file. that can be stored indefinitely and transmitted electronically anywhere, once again at practically no unit cost. And the third is a fairly simple machine that can translate these files into mechanical instructions so that the digital information can be reconstituted on demand as a library-quality paperback within minutes at relatively low cost, one at a time, at point of sale, wherever an internet connection exists. Think of this machine as an ATM for books, installed, for example, in your college library, a dormitory, or a nearby Kinko's, but also at the remote corners of the earth, so that readers anywhere can log onto a website and select eventually from literally millions of digital files in all languages the desired title, browse it on their screens, and transmit it to the nearest print-on-demand machine here at your dormitory, at UCLA, at a Kinko's store, at a Starbucks, an experience not unlike buying a book from Amazon's website, except that the choice of titles will be vastly greater, and in many languages, titles will never be out of stock or out of print, and delivery will be a matter of minutes, not days, and the price will be substantially less. I wish I had been able to bring with me a videotape on a CD-ROM showing what this machine looks like and how it actually works, but as it happened, my laptop collapsed. A warning to anyone who is counting on the digital future to do what it's expected to do. However, let me try to explain what it is. It's a machine maybe half again as long as the table that I'm sitting at. There are two tables here, or two-thirds the length of both of them together, or a little less than that. It's completely integrated. That is, it prints, trims, and binds automatically without any human attendant required. You can put it practically anywhere. You can put it in a submarine. You could put it in an airplane. You could put it in the basement of the library here. You could put it in the most remote corners of the earth, and it will work automatically. It will receive a digital file from anywhere, and it will, in a matter of seconds, translate that information into mechanical instructions, the trim size, the page length, the financial and contractual details. It will distribute the payment to the appropriate places, and it will do this automatically within minutes. It is a revolutionary device. When I first saw this in the workshop, literally a garage out in the Midwest, of the eccentric fellow who invented it, I thought I was looking at Gutenberg's printing press for the first time, because it seemed to me that here was a vast revolution in the making. I think within 10, 15 years, you'll see these machines everywhere, and that will transform much more than the publishing business. That will transform the world. Now, compare the publishing business made possible by these new technologies with the way books are published today. The author submits a manuscript in digital form. A hard copy is then made, and an editor prepares the work for the press, a task requiring great skill, and one that cannot be replaced by new technologies, no matter how subtle. That editorial process is part of the creative process, without which the book might not exist. Thereafter, however, all other functions become redundant. There will be no need to prepare offset plates for a high-speed press capable of printing thousands of copies in a few hours, but incapable of printing 10 or 20 copies when the initial quantity is exhausted but demand remains for copies as needed. The press run is then packed on skids and shipped to the publisher's warehouse, where it is unpacked and reshipped to wholesalers and chain store depositories and in smaller quantities to major retailers. Books are then unpacked again by the wholesaler and chain store depository and shipped a third time to individual stores where they await buyers who may or may not find them in stock when wanted. The distribution of books is a very, very hit or miss affair. After a few months, unsold copies are returned to publishers' warehouses and destroyed. To see one of these giant warehouses filled with thousands, even millions of books, copies of recent bestsellers waiting to be pulped or burned, as well as smaller quantities of valuable books which no longer provide The retail chain's a satisfactory rate of turnover inspires pity and terror, a slaughterhouse for books. This horror will become redundant when these new technologies are in place. In the digital future, this unsatisfactory process will be bypassed. Like Dell computers, books will not exist until someone orders them. But unlike Dell computers, they will incur no delivery cost and no cost for parts inventory. There will be no inventory at all for publishers to finance. Titles will never be taken off sale and never go out of print. There will be no returns. The buyer will pay only for the printed book itself, the author's royalty, and the publisher's much reduced costs and normal profit. The cost of delivery, inventory management, and books that are returned and destroyed will not be factored into the retail price, and there will be no wholesale or retail markup. This new technology will, at a reasonable estimate, deliver a book at somewhat less than two-thirds the present cost of that same book. But the consumer, the consumer will benefit by paying less and by having books available continuously. And for the author, who will now have contributed relatively much more value than the publisher, the share of proceeds will be far greater. I would guess that with this new technology, the proceeds to authors will be about 70% of what the publisher receives, rather than the 30% that authors now get of that amount. If this is a little bit technical, maybe I can expand on it later if somebody wants to ask about it. But the beneficiaries here will be the public, who pay less, the author, who will earn more, and even the publisher, whose costs will now be so reduced that the share remaining for him will be far greater than his share of the proceeds today, and there'll be much less risk. But the most significant difference is that every book ever written can hereafter be scanned at nominal cost, if it is not already in digital form, stored indefinitely, and transmitted in various translations without incurring inventory expense to these book ATM machines, so that readers practically anywhere on earth can have the same access to books enjoyed by readers with access to the world's great libraries. In fact, far greater access than such readers have today. When you consider the impact of movable type on the Latinate culture of late medieval Europe, and then contemplate what these new technologies mean for the world at large, culturally and politically, as well, of course, as commercially, you will begin to glimpse the magnitude of the paradigm shift that awaits us, in my opinion, as I've said, not much more than a decade from now. The distribution of books is a sedate business compared with noisier and more flamboyant technologies. But Gutenberg's invention struck the earth with the force of an asteroid. The exponentially greater effects of these new technologies can hardly be imagined. Nevertheless, I shall try to suggest some of them in the time remaining, bearing in mind, of course, that we are at the Kitty Hawk stage of development, where no one could have foreseen microwave meals at 35,000 feet or airborne assassins with exploding shoes. These new technologies will enable anyone to become a publisher. But this doesn't mean that people are going to read whatever shows up on the World Wide Web. Human beings cannot read what is unreadable. Unreadable books will, as always, go unread. Nevertheless, the power of the traditional filters, the agents, editors, and reviewers, who traditionally have screened what is at least readable from what is not, will be diluted by these new technologies. Though websites known for their quality or for this or that specialty will be favored by readers, as such imprints always have been. But the primary means by which books have always come to be known, bought and read or ignored and discarded, is word of mouth. And for this function, the World Wide Web will be an enormous amplifier, challenging and supplementing traditional media. Hereafter, publishers and perhaps agents acting as publishers will establish personal websites for their authors and link these sites to any number of other sites of related interest. And in this way, writers will, so to speak, possess their audiences directly, permanently, and personally through these personal web networks, which will offer the author's growing backlist for sale indefinitely to a worldwide audience rather than at the convenience of the retail book chains constrained by their insatiable need for turnover and margin and their limited marketing range. Publishing companies of the future will consist of like-minded groups of editors, publicists, and website managers as the traditional infrastructure becomes redundant and its residual functions are increasingly outsourced. New technologies, however, do not immediately or totally replace existing technologies. Commercial bestsellers, Stephen King, John Grisham, that sort of thing, will, I believe, continue, as far as the eye can see, to be printed centrally, trucked to Price, Costco, and Walmart, and returned after a few months by the truckload and pulped, as they are now. New fiction and nonfiction, I believe, will continue to be published and promoted traditionally in hardcovers. But backlist, the major source of publisher stability and profit, will be transmitted electronically and printed on demand at point of sale. As these new technologies are widely deployed, the number and range of backlist titles available for print on demand will number in the millions as titles become available worldwide in many languages. So that fluency in English will no longer be the inflammatory precondition for literacy, and the cost of maintaining physical inventories of slow-moving titles no longer limits the number of translations that can be offered. What I foresee is a vast virtual library available on demand wherever internet connections exist, cluttered no doubt at the edges with much dubious and even vicious material. But on a smaller scale, this has always been the case, and people have nevertheless found and kept what is valuable and eventually got rid of the rest. I trust that this winnowing will continue as world literacy vastly increases in the decades and centuries to come. I do not believe that most readers will want to read most books online, though I do believe that all reference books, atlases, dictionaries, encyclopedias, guidebooks, and so on, as well as many kinds of college textbooks that are out of date upon publication will soon be distributed online by subscription and no longer published in book form. I believe that the Oxford University Press is already packaging its wonderful line of reference books, including the Oxford English Dictionary, to be sold by subscription online, and others will follow suit. And of course, as many of you know, college textbooks are already being distributed more and more online for a fee, a monthly fee or some such thing. As for the impact of these technologies on the creative process itself, one may only speculate. However, the forms in which stories are told seem to me integral to human nature, and for that reason, they will be very slow to change. We still read the Iliad and the Old Testament as if they were written yesterday. Oedipus Rex and Hamlet live next door, perhaps together, discussing their mothers. Literary form has evolved slowly over millennia, and I do not see abrupt changes in this process. And yet, consider the impact of the written alphabet, a paradigm shift of enormous consequence, which permitted narrative to be preserved indefinitely as prose, so that it no longer had to be stored mnemonically as verse. Or consider the technological upheaval, the direct result of movable type and widespread vernacular literacy, that produced the European middle class, and with it the novel, the characteristic form of bourgeois storytelling. These transformations are obvious in retrospect, but to have anticipated them would have been impossible, and it's impossible now to anticipate where these technologies are going to take us with respect to literary creation, that is, forms of storytelling. Tomorrow's new technologies, however, will make possible intimacy between writer and reader that was all but lost with the industrialization of book production, except in the isolated cases of writers like Charles Dickens, who read their works in progress aloud to intimate audiences like this today, and took note of their responses. Such interaction between writer and reader is once more possible via the internet with what consequences one can only imagine. Another consequence, I think, will be that a work never has to be completed by an author in his lifetime. I can imagine many authors will be tempted to maintain their works as works in progress, since there is no need for a cutoff date to accommodate a publisher's schedule and the printing press. Authors can literally go on forever. That may or may not be a good thing, but I suspect we'll be seeing something like that. Predictions, of course, are wishful and provisional. Who can tell in any detail what forms this coming transformation will take? That it will occur, I have no doubt. That the existing publishing establishment will resist it passively at first and vigorously as the threat increases, I also do not doubt. I know my colleagues well and understand and even share their fears and confusion, their denials and their profound conservatism and their tendency to whistle past graveyards. I also know their underlying fear that these technologies will eventually displace much of the infrastructure, the legacy of the Gutenberg era in which they've invested their careers, and which many of them, especially on the managerial level, confuse with the act of publishing itself. But I'm also grimly aware, as are my colleagues, of the irreparable flaws in the present system, the overconcentrated retail marketplace, the constant pressure imposed by this marketplace upon publishers for ever more rapid turnover and margin, the consequent erosion of once valuable backlists, the ever narrower profit margins, and the widespread demoralization as publishing companies are crushed between the demands of the powerful retail book chains on the one side for more discount, and by the authors and their agents on the other side for ever greater advance guarantees. With each new season, the present systems become more fragile, less rewarding emotionally and financially, as agents demand ever more money for their potential bestsellers and the retail chains demand ever more discounts. That these new technologies have emerged just as the old system has become untenable and begun to crack is fortuitous, one might even say miraculous, but it has happened. I think we should be grateful, and we shall soon begin to see the beginnings of the outcome. Thank you very much.